Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So people are wondering, okay, is that music on Point of View? Absolutely. Because we're in a heritage weekend, long weekend kind of mode. And Sheldon is here with us. He wasn't with us over the past weekend on Thursday. So he's here with us today. Sheldon, good evening and welcome.
Hi, Pamela. How are you doing?
Well, you know, we couldn't allow you to not see us and let a week go by without doing a wonderful heritage. This is a heritage tribute, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So what did you have in mind?
So... well, we're doing this over two nights, so you're getting me. Yes. You're getting me for two nights this week.
Shame. Yes, while they're throwing back some nice drinks, we'll be entertaining them nicely.
Actually, what I found quite interesting last year, I went to the Summer Awards, and at the Summer Awards, the one thing I really noticed was the crowd's reaction to a lot of like indigenous South African music. Like there seems to be this big revival in the genre. Well, not in the genre, but in the type of music, and people feeling like this immense connection to their roots. And a few years ago when I was doing my PhD, I interviewed a professor from the university, Tshwane University of Technology, and he was enlightening me about like the like African tradition of like music and dance and how the two are so interdependent, number one, but also such an integral part of the culture of being a South African, because it was often a way to transmit history and storytelling, and it's a whole lot of things mixed into one, which is music and dance and storytelling, all mixed into one thing. And there's so much synergy between that and like myself, I'm of Portuguese extraction, although I was born in South Africa, where there's a very similar kind of like link to music and culture and storytelling and a link between the culture and the music. And two things that cannot be separated from each other. And so the artists that I chose for today are artists that are quite modern. One of them is a heritage artist, but they're quite modern and yet are exploring like a very traditional sound in the music. This specific artist also happens to be one of my former students. His name is Anati. And Anati, when I remember when his mother sent me his demo recording. I mean, no one sends demo recording. This is high school.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, why is a mother going to send a demo recording to the head of the music department at South Downs College? But anyway, so she sends me this demo recording, and it's of this 13-year-old kid. I listen to it. I mean, I'm jaded. I've been doing this for so many years. I've had parents sending me videos of their kids performing at iStedford's. I've seen it all.
Yes.
So, like, I'm a little bit jaded. So I put the thing in and I start listening to the track and I'm like, oh my goodness, this kid is off the charts.
So you
talented.
Already could feel that he is talented, even as you've seen hundreds and hundreds come through your doors and
exactly.
so on.
And you know, it's like, I think it was Simon Cowell that said when he started The X Factor that there's just something about someone.
So what was it about Anati?
Well, Anati specifically was like, when his mother sent me the thing, I was like, oh, this is really good. I mean, it's good. The sound's cool. It's innovative. It's progressive. It's something different. And then she said, oh, and he produced everything. And I was like, what?
What? So you were thinking that the end product is good,
yeah.
but you were not thinking he did everything.
On his own,
gosh.
At the age of 13.
Wow.
So he was already doing it. And I remember, and this is, I think, something that a lot of parents struggle with when they are gifted with a creative child, is like, my child is creative, what are they going to do?
What do we do?
Exactly, because it's like, it's such a volatile industry.
Absolutely.
And I mean, as contract workers, because that's essentially what a creative is there long-term sustainability in a career, you know? Because like today you might be getting lots of contracts, but what's the deal with tomorrow, you know? Like, is it consistent? Is it sustainable? And I remember the mother being very concerned about whether or not, you know, her son was going to do well and like that he really needed to do well in high school because this might be the only thing that could, you know, save him somewhere down the line. He needed a plan B. It couldn't be the music. And I remember sitting her down, and I think it was at this stage in grade 11, and I said, don't worry about Anati. He will be a success come hell or high water.
Whatever he does.
Because that kid was a hustler. And I mean, and he's done so well. I mean, that song, Wena, 2018, but 1.8 million streams on Spotify. I mean, he's done really well for himself. Forbes magazine Africa listed him as one of the top 30 under 30 creatives in Africa.
So let's just quickly talk about the streaming services, right? The Spotify's, Apple Music's, and all of that. Does it, and I'm obviously, as you know, old school, does it translate like the record labels used to translate financially?
And this is quite an interesting thing because a lot of people talk about this, and you know, and I know a lot of artists like, we're not getting anything for, you know, we're getting billions of streams.
But because most of them now rely on performances, live performances.
Do they, though? I mean, this is the thing, you know, like analyzing the situation. So 1.8 million streams is divided by 1,500 to get an equivalent, like, album sale equivalent.
What? 1,000 how much?
1,500.
That's a lot.
So 1.8 million
that's a lot.
Is about 1,200 units. So it's not a lot.
It's like reward. You know those reward cards where you've got like thousands and thousands of rands, like, but actually thousands of rands is like 5 rand.
20 rand.
Yeah.
Anyway, exactly. So it's not a lot. But the reality is, back in the pre-streaming era, people weren't making money from album sales either. There were very few people that were making money from album sales. And you'd hear all the time artists were complaining that they were swindled by the record companies. And they were selling, like in South Africa, if you were selling 20,000 units, you were selling a lot.
What was gold? 100?
40,000 now. It was 50,000 back then.
Like,
so it's not a lot.
That's nothing.
And so people were complaining back then that they weren't making money. I don't think anything's changed. They're not making money from streaming either, unless you're Taylor Swift and you're doing like a few billion streams of a single. You're not really making money from it. Back in the day, pre-streaming, people were only making money from doing live performance.
Okay.
And now they're only making money from live performance. Thing. So nothing's really changed.
Okay, gotcha.
I think streaming what it's done is democratize the music industry more. So prior to streaming, the record companies were gatekeepers, so they would decide what would be released, when it would be released, but who would produce it, what sequence the songs would be released in, and all of that is now fallen by the wayside. And now an artist can decide, you know, if they're going to release through a major record label, if they're going to release alone, when they're going to release, how many singles they're going to release. So everything shifted. It's democratized things a little bit more. With that has come a lot more competition, but the industry is accessible to a greater number of people. Anyway, so Anati did very well for himself. Great kid. Landed up writing two songs for Beyonce's The Gift album. He did a song with Beyonce called and Blue Ivy called Brown Skin Girl, and then he did another song with Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar. So I mean, he's collaborated with big names in South Africa. He's done work with AKA, Casper Nyovest, Nasty C, Lebo M, Ricky Rick, Danny Kay. I mean, the names just go on and on. And what I found very interesting is that his first album was very hip hop, but this album, which was his second album, Iyeza, had a completely different sound. A lot more back to the roots, a lot more organic, a lot more indigenous. And that Wena song, you can hear like a lot of like African, Afrobeat sounds in it, and like a reversion to like a more authentic indigenous sound.
Wow. I mean, so this young man is going to go places with this.
I think he is going to go places, and I think and he has the thing about Anati is that he's got his head screwed on right. He knows what he wants to achieve, he knows what the objectives are, and he knows how to get himself there.
So everybody knows this song, Mapikizolo, right?
Yeah. So what I like about
Imlanjeni
from their fifth studio album Kwela, which is a traditional, you know, South African urban genre, featuring the penny whistle, but the The thing about Mafiku Zulu when they came out was that they were such a groundbreaking act. Mm. It was like the first time where, you know, we'd had Kwaito, which was the big thing, and there was like this very amped up music. Like everything was like, if you're thinking about a photograph, like everything was on high saturation. It was just like bright and loud and fast and big. And then Mafiku Zulu came out and was like a breath of fresh air, because it was like something like light and breezy and fresh.
Festive.
Yeah, and also like a reversion back to our roots, you know, like, but not just like almost like 1920s roots, like an era in which you know, black people were celebrated,
and it's also communal. Their music sort of is very, it forces us to come together and do this together, sing along.
And, and it was like beautiful clothing. Everything was so beautiful and polished and refined. And it was just such a beautiful, like, band. And the way that they were put together was just so beautiful. Mm. And the band did so well. I mean, that song had 7.3 million streams on Spotify.
Wow.
The band members, Theo, Nhlanhla, and Teboho, but and then Teboho landed was murdered in 2004 on Valentine's Day. What is up with South Africans and Valentine's Day murders? Anyway, so he was murdered in 2004. But the band did very well. 14 SAMA Awards. They had 2 MTV Africa Awards. And I just, what I love about them is, although they're relatively new, I mean, they're from the new millennium, they're definitely a heritage act. Mm. You know, like an act that that you look at and you go, wow, that is an authentically South African, like it's like super legit.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound, I mean, that song, you hear the like beautiful gospel roots in the music, like it's got like a traditional gospel sound in it mixed with like other indigenous sounds. It's just like beautifully put together. Mm-hmm. And you just think, you know, we need to celebrate that more.
Yeah,
and I love that they brought it back. And they brought it back from a pre-apartheid era, actually, into like this post-apartheid reality.
You and I have spoken about bands before.
Yeah.
And how bands just never stay together.
Yeah.
And sometimes the greatest bands, you know, their biggest downfall is that they can't stay together.
Exactly.
This has been one of those bands that has been able to hold it together, keep it together.
Exactly.
Lasting, long lasting.
Yeah.
And also,
and I love the fact that they didn't just go and replace Teboho.
This is it.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said, because word does go around, and now we've got social media, that there is something to be said about how professional they are, and their reputation precedes them. Everybody knows that when you get Mafiki Zulu, you get professionalism, no stories, and it does go a long way in how, you know, the audiences consume you.
And I think that's the big thing, you know, like I think a lot of people believe, you know, have this like, I don't know, like a perception or like an ideal that being a star means that you need to be a diva,
yes,
or you need to be a prima donna, and you need to go in and you have to request all the yellow M&Ms, you know, like, please get rid of all the others because I'm not going to eat.
I just eat yellow.
Yeah, I don't eat the green ones. Anyway, that is not how it works, because the thing is that no matter how famous you are at any given time, anyone's replaceable. Even a Taylor Swift is replaceable.
Yeah.
Although she's the biggest star in the world at the moment and bringing in billions, in 10 years' time, she'll be nobody.
Yeah.
Or she'll be, you know, like a nostalgia act.
Yeah.
And there'll be a new Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
So no one is that irreplaceable.
Mm.
And if you're not, I mean, look at Janet Jackson last week.
Yeah.
She couldn't make it. Within a few days, they've got 2 other artists that have replaced her.
Mm.
So no one's irreplaceable.
Mm.
And so the only way you can ensure long-term longevity in this industry is by being someone who can be relied on.
Mm.
You know that you're going to get a polished product at the end of the day, and that the people are going to act with integrity.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing worse than like what you hear of in the industry where someone gets booked and then they get a a gig that's paying more money somewhere else, and then they drop that person and they go for the gig that's paying more money. Yes, it's great. We all want to make lots of money, but at the end of the day, if you're dropping people like that left, right and center, your days are going to be numbered somewhere down the line.
And unreliable talent has, my gosh, I mean, right now, word spreads like fire so quickly.
Exactly.
So quickly. And yeah, there are people who've been really, really talented who, unfortunately, their reputation has just let them down.
Exactly. And that is the worst possible thing. That is a career killer, because although you might be making the extra 10 or 20,000 rand now because you dumped that gig for another gig, that reputation is going to precede you, and eventually no one's going to want to book you.
The voice of Johnny Clegg. Who could forget Johnny Clegg? EMB.
So what I love about Johnny Clegg is that the guy was like, you know, like, We often forget that there were many white people that were involved in the liberation of this country. And he was one of those white people. He didn't need to get involved in all of this stuff that was going on. He could have led a very nice, privileged lifestyle and not gotten involved at all. But I don't think that his intention in getting involved was to get involved.
Yeah.
I think it just happened. So he was actually born in England. I didn't know that. And then moved to, when he was about 6 months old, his parents moved to Rhodesia because his mother was Rhodesian and his dad was Scottish. Anyway, they moved to Rhodesia, and then the parents divorced when he was 6 years old, and then they moved, the mother and him moved to South Africa. And in South Africa, they settled in Yeovil. Now, Yeovil, at the time that they settled there, was like a buzz. It was like the entertainment capital of Johannesburg. Like all the clubs, all the bars, like all the coolest places to listen to music, to make music, were in Yeovil. But it also attracted a very like cosmopolitan group of people. So there were like, there were the white Jewish people living there, and then there were musicians, there were migrant workers, there was a whole, and one of the first groups that he interacted with was a group of Zulu migrant workers. And through his interaction with these guys, he learned how to speak Zulu. He learned the Zulu dances. He learned how to play maskandi on the guitar. And as a kid, it must have been such a vibe for him, you know, like coming from he would never remember the UK very well, but I mean, interacting with these like different characters and making music together. And by the time he was 16, he formed his first band, Juluka. And they started making music, and I think it was like this, like an oddity, you know, like a white guy speaking such fluent Zulu with a black guy, and they're making music, and in South Africa at that time. So there was like a level of curiosity about what these guys are doing. But at the same time, although their music wasn't political, it became political by association. And so they became a bit of a target for the South African government at the time. A lot of their music was banned and censored.
And he wasn't allowed to go into the hostel. A few times he apparently dodged the routes to going to the hostel for practice.
Exactly. And he got arrested various times and thrown into prison. And the beautiful thing about Johnny Clegg is that not only did he show, you know, like that there could be that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, he was a symbol of a light at the end of the tunnel, but he was also a symbol of like racial harmony in this country, that it could coexist, that people from all the races could live together. And so he holds a very interesting a place in our history as someone who sort of bridged the gap between the one side and the other side. Because I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing is fear. And people fear what they don't know. And I think with Johnny Clegg, he wasn't fearful. And so he was interacting with all different types of people. And so for him, it wasn't a fear thing, like going to a hostel. Like, what is that? You know, that's just where people live. And so he was interacting with people, and he showed that there was a level of harmony and peace that could coexist between the different races in this country.
Wow. I mean, there's nothing that screams heritage than this music.
Yes,
right?
Java. But before we get there, I just wanted to say about Johnny Clegg. I wasn't entirely done with Johnny Clegg.
Okay, go
but,
ahead.
But the you know, I mean, the thing that a lot of people don't know was that he was an anthropologist.
Yes.
So he graduated from Wits with a BA honors in anthropology. Mm-hmm. He got 5 honorary doctorates in his lifetime. So he got one from Wits, he got one from City University of New York, he got one from Dartmouth mm-hmm. College in the United States, UKZN gave him one, and he also got one from the Durban University of Technology. Mm-hmm. So from universities around the world. So not only was he a recognized individual in South Africa, worldwide, people recognized him. He also got OBE from Queen Elizabeth, Order of the British Empire, and he received a Chevalier of Arts and Letters from the French government. So
let's talk.
We've got a lot of great musicians in this country.
I haven't heard his son in a while.
Jesse Clegg.
Jesse. And how is that music going?
Well, I don't know. I heard him earlier this year, mm-hmm. and the guy is super talented, mm-hmm. like very, very talented musician. And it's amazing to see, like, almost like an evolution of Jesse Clegg.
He's definitely not his father.
He's not his father.
He's got his own identity.
Very much so. But also, like, you can see the roots stem from the same place. Mm. And very dynamic stage performer, like a brilliant stage performer. So it was really nice watching him perform earlier this year. But as far as his output is concerned, I'm not that aware of, like, what is happening there.
Okay.
But Java, who's our current artist that we were just listening to, that was featuring Big Zulu and Nkabi Zizwe.
Yeah.
That song received 10 million streams on Spotify. So it was really, really big.
So let me quickly ask you this question. So 10 million on Spotify.
Yeah.
That means
that's one platform.
Only, yes, on I was going to say, yeah. only on Spotify.
Yeah, so then there's Apple.
I think the
reason why people quote Spotify so much because you can see the numbers.
Oh, I see.
Whereas with the others, you can't really see the numbers.
Okay, gotcha.
And so you can quote those numbers from Spotify. But yes, it does mean that there will be 10 million there and maybe another 10 million there, et cetera, et cetera, and combined. And then there's YouTube as well. And, you know, like usually with the online distributors, because that's how your music. So the way a musician would, in the old days, what used to happen is you'd get signed to a record deal. And then the record company would distribute the music to different retailers.
Yes.
But that has sort of like fallen by the wayside.
The platforms are the retailers.
Yes. So now, what you do is you get an online distributor like TuneCore or CD Baby or there's a whole lot of them. And then what they will do is they will get you onto the online retailers like Apple Music or Spotify or et cetera, et cetera, the Pandora, Deezer, there's just millions of them. And so they will, so if you sign up to like an online distributor, they will distribute you to 250 different online platforms that will have your music. So that 10 million could be 10 million across various different platforms.
And they collect?
And they collect. Gotcha. So that money gets paid directly to the artist. So it
not
won't go,
Samro and
no,
stuff
no,
like
no,
that
no,
anymore.
No, no.
That is interesting.
Yeah, so Samro still has a role because the songwriter will still get paid for all of those streams because those songs are registered as on the different platforms as this is the composer. So they will get their money. Mm. But the artist now, instead of waiting for the record label to pay them, they get paid
directly.
Immediately. Yes.
Really?
But now there's a few different models because sometimes it's the record company that loads the music onto the online distributors, so they will then still get paid. Yeah, but now the beauty of the new system is that you, as an individual, can register with a online distributor and distribute your music on your own without having to go through a record label. So that is how things have sort of shifted. But anyway, this Java guy, this song went 3 times platinum in South Africa. So other than the 10 million, which divided by 1.5, is not very much. He's also had 60,000 units that were sold in South Africa because his song went triple platinum, which is 20,000 units per platinum. Sure. So the song did very well. He's got 4 SAMA Awards, 1 BET Award, and 1 Metro FM Award.
And in your view,
yeah,
I mean, what sets him apart?
Sets him apart from other artists.
Yeah. What makes him so distinct? Because he's got a very distinct sound.
Right? He's got a very distinct sound. And I think the thing with him is that he hasn't steered clear of this, like, very authentic indigenous sound.
Very.
And also this, like, the look yeah. and feel is, like, very authentic.
Very authentic. I mean, you can't miss him.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely is, like, I'm assuming that's
yeah.
a Zulu,
yeah,
it's a Zulu brand. And it's amazing to see it because it's, like, unashamedly what it is. Mm. It's, like, this is who I am. It's beautiful. It's well presented. It's polished. The sound is polished. The imaging is brilliant. Like the photography and the album covers, everything is just very well thought out, very well put together. And the fans are buying into it. I mean, this artist does very well on the charts. Yeah, and the other thing with him as well is that not only is it like this very authentic indigenous sound, but and then he's also blending other elements like hip-hop and his pop music and contemporary R&B, and he's adding all of these different elements of music together to formulate this new brand, which is exactly what you need to do because also there's no such thing as an authentic genre anymore.
And the collaboration for me, I think, also does it. He's very good with collaboration.
Yeah, lots of collaboration. And I think that's, for example, for me, like, you look at big names like Prince, for example. Mm. Prince was a phenomenal artist, but he didn't really, like, his collaboration was more like an imposition on other artists. Like, this is what I've done. You need to do this. And it has to be done like this. And this is my thing. And I think that, like, it's great. But the problem is, like, what is the level of innovation? And for Prince, fortunately, he was a super talented musician. So, you know, he could feed the system. But at some point, there's nothing feeding the system anymore. And I think that is the beauty of collaboration, is that you're getting ideas from other people and you're putting them together into something new and assimilating ideas and putting them together and coming up with innovative and out-of-the-box kind of products. And I think that's, I mean, this Java model seems to be that. Mm. And he's done very well for himself. A lot of recognition for the work that he's done. He did the Black Panther soundtrack and you know, with Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar was the one that curated the whole soundtrack and he brought Sjava in, which indicates, you know, like the level of influence and the progressive sound that he wanted to...
And the reach.
Exactly.
His
the
own reach,
Exactly. So that's the beauty of like this Sjava brand, is that, you know, it's no longer just a... Although it sounds very authentically South African, it's something that people want to tap into.
Vusinova and Sahara.
Yes, and this is another one of my former students, Vusinova.
Really?
Yes.
What a talent.
Girl, that's where I've been in the business for too long.
You've been around.
But so this guy, I mean, I got him when he was... So this was in my tertiary education days.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to... our tertiary institution, and he was getting vocal training there and all of that stuff back in those days. But he started his career very young, at the age of 14. He decided that he was going to move to Johannesburg to pursue a career in music, but always very dynamic, very like well spoken, well put together person.
He is dynamic.
And even when he was a student, it was like
really?
you could see like
a star.
He was definitely a star.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden blew up, but blew up as an R&B singer and very much like a Nati. A Nati was started off as a hip-hop singer.
Mm.
And then the sound started shifting. This was from the fifth album, Mian Nyan. And this album was a lot more like indigenous, authentic, like gospely, a lot more like a big mover. You can still hear like elements of R&B in it, but it's a lot more authentic. And I think that's such a big thing because I remember it's definitely working for us.
I mean, when you look at the social media platforms and you see how the world is so happy to celebrate our authentic selves.
Exactly.
You keep thinking we should get this through our skulls.
Exactly.
They want us, not us being a version of themselves.
Exactly. I mean, why do you want another someone trying to be Mariah Carey? Mariah Carey's already doing that. You know, like, you can't compete with that. And that's why Tyler is such a huge success, because she's not trying to compete with, like, a Rihanna or, like, a Beyonce. She is Tyler. That is what she is, and she's doing her thing. And I think in the 1990s, when we were both much younger, Pamela...
when was that?
Last millennium. Anyway, last century. Anyway, South Africa lost its musical identity. I think
it was definitely an era where we were hip hopping a lot.
Yes.
We were trying to be R&B-ing a lot.
And that was in the 1990s. And the reason for that is understandable, because when something novel comes along, South Africa was on a lockdown for a very long time. There was no music allowed into the country that had anything to do with, like, anti-religion or anti-this or anti-that or anti-whatever. So, like, everything was banned. So very little international content was allowed to come in, and the remaining little, those artists refused to let their music be released in South Africa. So in 1990, when the doors opened up, we got flooded with international music, and it was a novelty, and people were like, wow, this is amazing. And then everyone wanted to sound like the rock band or the R&B singer or the country musician or whatever it was. And we lost ourselves in the midst of all of that. And I think this, finally, the one market that didn't lose its identity was the Afrikaans market, where people were supporting Afrikaans music, they were making Afrikaans music, they were pumping money into making Afrikaans music, and that industry flourished. And I think the same thing has now finally landed in the black music market, where people are celebrating indigenous music, they're celebrating their roots, the money's getting pumped into it, and the music is flourishing.
And people are consuming it also.
They're consuming it in hordes.
Yeah.
It's become a very desirable thing. I mean, the fact that two young artists, Anati and Vusi, and that's why I thought we'd start and end with them, that they reverted from the trajectory that they were on as a hip-hop and an R&B singer, and abandoned that to have a more authentic sound, that completely elevated their music from just, like, selling to, like, booming.
Yeah. So we've got our final song before we say goodbye. Maybe we'll say goodbye before we play the song.
Yeah.
And that is Paul Simon and Ladysmith, Black Mambazo.
Yes. So this was from the Graceland album, which was an iconic album in music history. I mean, a landmark album, 20 million units sold of this album. This is one of those instances where they would have made money from the album.
Yeah, yeah. They really would have made lots of money.
And on top of that, there was a massive Graceland.
Do you think they did?
I don't think the minions that were performing on the album made money, but I think Paul Simon made a lot of money.
No, I mean, Ladysmith
Black Mambazo, Ray Phiri was on that album. There were many South Africans made that album. That album was a South African
product. And they didn't make as much money as
they did make. I mean, apparently Paul Simon insisted on paying. So in the US, you cannot record unless you're part of a union.
Yes, absolutely. Like the actors, yes.
Yeah. So, but in South Africa, the sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. Mm. But when he came to South Africa, he took the American Union rate and he paid them more than what the American Union rate for a session musician was.
And they were session musicians?
Exactly. So
That's like
But in the same breath, I mean, Joseph Shabalala came to Paul Simon's defense and said, listen, if it hadn't been for this, we would have never blown up internationally the way that we did. We wouldn't have toured the world the way that we did. So this was a big, like, catalyst for the future of their career. They got 5 Grammy Awards out of that whole thing. But yes, I don't think they got a lot of money from the album.
Listen, so that's how we wrap it up. We've got some news. We'll see you tomorrow.
Yes.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Same time, same place.
Yes, one of you has sent a message saying, oh, is that Sheldon on a Monday? Yes, it's Sheldon on a Monday, and it'll be Sheldon again on a Tuesday, because that's how we do our holidays. Thanks, Sheldon.
Thank you, ma'am.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.